Welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom. I'm Celia Farber, and I'm here with my co-host, Christina Borgeson. In a moment, we're going to tell you who our esteemed guest is today, truly a national treasure, especially in these crazy times we're living through. And I just want to, as a little aside, I just want to say one of the things I have always instinctively feared in life, never knowing quite why, are charities. They've always given me slight shudders of dread whenever I hear about a charity. Now, today we're going to talk about the Bigfoot of depraved charities, and I imagine you have guessed which one that would be, the Clinton Foundation.
Well, now it's the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation.
They've changed the name.
They keep that family. I think it's to keep it a moving target, but we'll ask our guest about that.
So nobody alive that I'm aware of knows more about the crimes, financial and otherwise, of the Clinton Foundation than Mr. Charles Ortel. You might call him the Clinton family's worst nightmare.
I would say.
Mr. Ortel is a private investigator, writer, analyst, and financial crimes researcher. He covers financial markets and geopolitical developments and trends since 2015. He has been investigating the work of charities, in particular those that seem to be operating illegally to create wealth and extend political power for their trustees, executives, and selected donors. Gee, that sounds an awful lot like the Clinton Foundation. Now, before we introduce Charles, I found something online that was actually from 2010, but it just staggered me, even though I sort of knew it. And here it is, that the Clinton Foundation is the largest unprosecuted charity fraud ever attempted. That the Clinton Foundation is part of an international charity fraud network whose entire cumulative scale approaches and may even exceed $100 billion
measured from
1997.
That's from Mr. Ortel's website, actually.
Right. Oh, is that where I found it? Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. The most shocking aspect of the Clinton Foundation's missing billions, according to Mr. Ortel, is that much of it was stolen from those who need it most, the world's poorest of the poor. Along with the Bush crime family, the Clintons formed the Clinton-Bush-Haiti Fund. Ugh, talk about shudders. After the devastating 2010 Haiti earthquake, Charles says, what the Clintons have done is they are stealing the people's physical gold in Haiti, as well as perhaps stealing or diverting massive sums that were sent toward Haiti and refusing to make an accounting for it. Welcome, Charles Ortel.
Hello? Oh, we have a little gap here in our
Well, we know we have him close to us, if not on the airwaves.
And, you know, this is another line from his website that I took a note of, because I just thought it was, since their inception, Clinton Foundation and related entities have operated illegally to serve private interests under the cloak of charitable intention. So basically he's saying that they started this whole charity, with these associated organizations, et cetera, to make money. Ah, there he is. There he is. Welcome, Mr. Ortel.
Please call me Charles, and thanks for having me on.
Charles, it's so great to have you, and we have so much we need to talk to you about, and it's hard to know where to begin. We're itching to talk about Jeffrey Epstein's foundational connection to the Clinton Foundation. But first, let me just ask you this. In light of all the recent revelations, it is kind of like the book of revelations lately, with Epstein, with everything that's coming out about the Clintons and their nefarious deeds, do you feel that you have had sort of boulders fall even on you, things even you didn't know about how criminal and dreadful this foundation is?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot I don't know about, but fortunately, you know, I've been comfortably retired since 2002, and I have no boss other than my children, who are, you know, grown up, and I say that jokingly, and I do what I want. And so what I've been doing 24/7 since February 2015 is studying this. And
I mean, what I mean is, did you know about the connections to child trafficking networks and all this really dark stuff? Okay,
you did.
Mostly, I've heard you address the financial crimes of the Clinton Foundation. Yeah.
What did you when did you find out about that?
Well, you know, I try to stay away from the child sex trafficking, human trafficking stuff because it's such a dark subject and it's so diabolical. And there are other experts who really know that stuff well. But when I looked at this in the very beginning, and I really spent, it took me about a week or two to see this for the fraud that it is, my next question, set of questions was, wait a minute, if I can see this in a week or two, that this thing has been under investigation, how could this possibly be allowed to flourish for so long? There has to be a reason. And I'll reveal on air that one of my passions is collecting first edition mysteries. So I've been doing that for over 30 years, almost 40 years now. And, you know, I have this suspicious mind. I immediately say, well, blackmail must be involved. And how could blackmail come to light? You know, obviously getting people involved in underage sex and money laundering and drug running and stuff like that is an obvious way to take people who, after all, you know, the people in both, across the political spectrum who make the decision to run for high office, many of them are narcissists. And they're quite full of themselves across the political spectrum. And so it's easy to see how narcissists could get involved at a young age doing stuff they really wouldn't want the wider public to know about. And therefore, it's also easy to understand how devious, fraudster, criminal crooks could have a lot of dirt on a lot of people.
Now, I'm sorry, Charles. Forgive me. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Please continue.
Yeah, it's no problem. So, so you begin when you look at. I'm not just going to pick on the Clintons here. I'll pick on the Bushes as well. When you look at the long history of, let's start on Hillary Clinton, and you realize that she got involved with something called the Children's Defense Fund early on, and is pictured as, you know, this child's advocate, and. You know, there are, many of us have children, and many of us know of people who have had suffering children here in this great country, and then you travel and you see them around the world, and, you know, it's an easy pitch to make to the wider world, particularly with the Internet, to say that you're involved with a charity that's for the children. Everything's for the children. And who's really going to check that? I mean, you write a check for $25 and you don't worry about it too much or send it by email. But when millions of people do that, and maybe tens of millions of people are sending money, all, quote, for the children, supposedly to go to Africa or Haiti or whatever, who's actually going to go and try to check that?
Nobody.
Right. And so people understand that. Crooked people understand that. When you begin to see the same, in quotes, business, monkey business model being operated, you know, charities with similar sounding names that don't seem to have their paperwork right anywhere, charities with political crony trustees, charities with crooked accountants.
So that's what you saw with the with Hillary's Children's Defense Fund. What smelled about that?
Well, the first thing that smelled, that, you know, I'm not bragging or anything, but I went to Yale and I have connections at Yale, and I have friends who went through Yale Law School, and I happened to at a lunch for donors where the dean of Yale Law School gave a pitch to about 30 or 40 of us. And nice person. She's not of my political persuasion, but a nice person. And I nosed around with trustees, and I said, you know, how common is it to take 4 years to get through Yale Law School? The answer is, it very seldom does that happen. Hillary Clinton took 4 years to get through Yale Law School. Very suspicious.
What's the more common time frame?
Sorry?
It's longer, isn't it? Like 6.
Yeah, common as a time frame to get through Yale Law School?
It's 3 years.
Oh, is it only 3 for Yale Law School?
Yeah, 4 years undergraduate, then 3 years graduate. So,
right.
You know, you don't want, as somebody's, you know, I don't believe Hillary Clinton advertises herself as independently wealthy coming out of college. You got student loans. You don't want to take an extra year.
Oh, the money, right.
Right. You know, back when she got out in the early 70s, that was not a prime time. And so she takes a year off and gets involved with his Children's Defense Fund, and she writes all these books, which frankly I think are ridiculous. It takes a village and all that stuff. No, it doesn't take a village to raise a child. It takes two parents. And
yeah, that's
a lot of time and love and goodwill.
Well,
but
wait.
Anyway,
yeah, okay. Go ahead.
So you see this lifelong thing with Hillary for the children. You see Bill and Hillary getting involved in Haiti, early on. I mean, back in the 70s, I think they honeymooned in Haiti or they traveled to Haiti early on.
Oh, that far back. I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
they honeymooned in Haiti.
Christina grew up in Haiti,
I grew up in Haiti.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
Well, one of my classmates, a couple of years behind me at Yale, was the son of the ambassador to Haiti.
What's his name?
Ralph Isham.
Yeah, Isham. Yeah.
And I remember back, I had a little bit of extra money, and I was thinking of going someplace warm in the winter when I was in college, and I say, hey, Ralph, should I go down to Haiti? He's like, are you kidding me? The son of the ambassador is living. It's crazy to go down there in 75, 76, 77 time frame. Maybe he was wrong.
Well, Well, Baby Doc was in power back then.
Right. And so the thing of it is, when you look, and I've done several, quite a few broadcasts actually with your sister, with your anchor, Yatrice Lead, on Progressive Radio, and also with Gary. When you look at Haiti, and I've never been to Haiti, I mean, that is a tragedy. That so many bad things have happened to that small country for so long, for so many decades. And then, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and the Clinton family start, nosing around the various disasters, and they say they're going to raise money for the people of Haiti. And nobody has ever made an accounting for the billions of dollars that supposedly went towards Haiti in 2010. And, right. And that money came flowing in like a tidal wave. The instant there was the incident, January, whatever date it was.
Wait, Charles, before we get to that part, what happened? What about the Children's Defense Fund? Are you saying she took that money to
what? No, I'm saying that she got around the idea. I haven't studied the Children's Defense Fund, and I hope and pray that thing is well run. But she got around the idea, she got some training early on, that some real practical life experience with the Children's Defense Fund, seeing that money would flow towards a charity somehow connected with children.
Okay,
and,
I get it.
And then over time, when they finally got around to setting up this, this what is now called the Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, they migrated that thing in a grossly illegal fashion, in my view, and according to lawyers I've spoken to, away from being what it's the only thing that thing is authorized to do lawfully, in theory, is to hold presidential records and allow scholars to study them in a purpose-built facility located in Little Rock, Arkansas. That's the only thing it's authorized to do as a charity. Everything else is fiction and fraud, in my view.
The formation of the Clinton Foundation, if I'm correct, happened in 1997. Is that right?
Okay, so that's a very interesting question. When I initially got into this, and in my business life, obviously lawyers helped me organize many, many corporations. What happened was on October 23rd, 1997, in Little Rock, lawyers from Williams & Connolly and another local law firm filed incorporation papers for something called the William J. Clinton Presidential Foundation. Okay? That is not the same thing as organizing a corporation. To organize, you have to have an organizational meeting. You have to name trustees or directors. In this case, they call them trustees. You have to, those trustees, not the lawyers, have to adopt bylaws, which are the documents separate from articles of incorporation that explain how a corporation would be run. And at that moment in time, all you are is a nonprofit corporation, in this case in Arkansas, that is not yet federally tax exempt. To be federally tax exempt, you have to fill out this long application. And in that application, among other things, you have to truthfully declare any conflicts, any pre-organization activities, any related party activities, and all of that. And they didn't do any of that. Now, they thought they'd get away with all this because at the time Bill was still president and the Clintons were very influential in Arkansas at that moment in time. They figured nobody ever check all this stuff, is my guess. But I have. And you know, I haven't checked everything, but I've checked through the records of the city of Little Rock, and I've checked through the records of Pulaski County, and I've checked through newspapers, and I've checked through this and checked through that. And the problem they have, among many problems they have, is that between October 23, 1997, when it was incorporated, and December 23, 1997, when they filed their application for federal tax exemption, there's numerous records, indeed of one specifically, saying that Bill and Hillary Clinton picked the site of this, what is now the presidential library, on November 7th, 1997. Well, there are no bylaws completed by then. Those were completed on December 23, 1997. And Bill and Hillary Clinton had no connection, official connection, to the Clinton Foundation. So any serious examination, which the IRS might be wanting to do, of whether this thing was actually organized properly, would come away and say, no, it wasn't. It never, it didn't complete its organization process. Truthfully, it never filed a tax return for 1997. In other states, like Michigan, they actually were forced to fill out a form concerning 1997, in which they said to the authorities in Michigan, sending the document across state lines using the mail, that the Clinton Foundation was not organized in 1997. And why does that matter? Because normally what the IRS does when they're serious about investigations, they say, you've got to pass two tests. One is called the organizational test, and the other is called the operational test. If you fail either one, you're not federally tax exempt, and we have a right to go back as the IRS and retroactively revoke your tax exemption. And they failed the organizational test. Having failed that, they went around soliciting illegally, getting disciplined for soliciting illegally and hiding that or attempting to from the public, so they failed the organizational test. So, you know, I figured that out back in February of 97, not all of it, but February of 2015.
Do you think they did this deliberately, Charles, or do you think this was just sloppiness on their part?
Absolutely deliberately.
Okay.
You know, Bill Clinton, when he was in Georgetown, one of the professors he was studied with is a gentleman called Carol Quigley, who was well versed in this issue of how charities are abused. When he got to Arkansas, you know, one of the things that the Clintons seem to forget is that books that they get overpaid to write remain in circulation. And many of these books, you know, say I did this and I did that, thinking that, you know, no one's going to look at it through the prism of I committed charity fraud. Bill wrote a book published in September 2007, where somebody wrote a book under Bill's name called Giving, whose real title, I would argue, should be called Taking.
Wow.
And this book brags about when he got into politics. For example, there's some dinner, it's called the raccoon dinner or something, and politicians in Arkansas have to go to, and it's become this institution where lots of people go to this tiny town somewhere in Arkansas, which doesn't have enough, you know, internal wealth to fund a football team. So they hold this dinner, this political dinner, and they raise a ton of money, and they basically jokes that they serve roadkill at the dinner, and they have to cover it all. It's in the book, you know, and they cover it. Covered up the taste of it up with hot sauce.
Oh, my God.
And he jokes about how, you know, and nobody seems to ask, in so many words, nobody seems to ask about why we're raising all the same money year after year for a football team, more than the football team needs. And this is the fundamental building block of the Clinton and other charity frauds. And you see them here, you know, I'm in New York City, and I stopped going to those gala dinners a long time ago because I hated them. But how you have these dinners and they say they raise a certain number, whoever checks any of that? You know, it's like the record business, the movie business, the book business. You never know how many albums movie tickets and books are truly sold. And similarly with a charity, you could say you raised $250,000, but what if you really raised $2.5 million and you're stealing $2.25 million before you get to the charity's books?
But
I think a key step in all this is that that the Clintons have raised far more money, or people around the Clintons and the Clintons have raised far more money than they put into the books of the charity. Then the second step, which you know people like me focus on, is you look at the actual supposed financial statements of the Clinton charities. And I can tell you, as somebody, people refer to me as a financial expert. I refer to myself as somebody who's always learning something about finance every day. But when you look at the purported books of the Clinton Foundation, there are no audits. 97, 98, 99, 2000. The first you see is for 2001, but of course it's not on their Clinton site.
But aren't audits required by law?
Absolutely.
Independent
absolutely.
Audits, right? Required by law for...
Absolutely.
Well, how did they get away with that?
Let's just see. Now, where did the Clintons move to by 2000?
New York.
They moved... And Washington, D.C.
Right.
Okay. And who's going to challenge the Clintons in New York and Washington, D.C.? So far, nobody. So, you know, I would argue that we have a serious problem in the Attorney General's office here in New York, not because it's been Democrats only, but because this city is being, you know, the Trump tax plan is really trouble for New York City. And the long decades of abuse, which have allowed too many feather-bedding, high-paid jobs and expensive projects, have created a mountain of debt for New York State and New York City. And we have, I believe, a crooked bunch of people in the charity department in New York State who have allowed this obvious fraud to go on and on and on. And think how valuable it is to get a piece of paper from somebody saying, you know, last year you made $1 million. We'll just say on this piece of paper that you gave a charity $500,000. And nobody's going to check because we've got the Charity Bureau covered, the IRS covered, everything, you know, all on the you know, unregulated globalist Democrat team. So we're not going to check any of this. And so the city, you know, and the state and the federal government lose a tremendous amount of money. I think this has been going on for decades in New York, in California, in Illinois, in Massachusetts, in many of the states with the high tax rates. And that's an important piece of this puzzle. Not only that it's going on, but that, you know, you see in Schneiderman and now the current Letitia James going after Trump for, you know, if the Trump people made mistakes with their charity, they should be punished for it. But, you know, the Clinton Foundation has been operating illegally in New York City from unregistered offices. It is controlled illegally by Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton, or it was. This is supposed to be a public charity, not a private foundation. There's a big difference. A public charity cannot be controlled by a family. You're right, it absolutely needs to have a real audit. And an audit is not an idle thing. An audit is, you know, it's not like writing a fiction book. An audit, you got to go check what are generally accepted accounting principles. There's a long list of them. And this thing has never actually got proper audits. The first one that they tried to do, covering the period 2004 and 2005, is riddled with mathematical errors. I've gone through this. I've done 169 two-hour podcasts, which you can see on Jason Goodman's YouTube channel, where I take people through this in great depth. I give you the slides. I give you the calculations. You know, I try to make it idiot-proof. And you would think that if I'd made an error, somebody at the Clinton Foundation would say, hey, dude, you better stop saying this because it's wrong. Nobody's challenged me.
Let me ask you something. Nobody. Why can't you file a whistleblower complaint with all this information? Because that's financial fraud against the government, and they're always very interested in going after financial fraud, and you'd get a, you know, like a QI-TAM suit, you know?
Right. So I looked into that at the inception, and I was told that if I did that, I'd have to shut up, and I couldn't do what I'm doing on the media. I made a decision that, you know, I do have a book agent, a very good book agent, and I thought, you know, if I'm going to, the better path here is to explain what I see, what I saw, how long it took to get this across the line, and to lay a framework down for the public to consider, to have the carrot out there for people to look at my work, and that people want to, you know, do a bit more work and hire experts and file suits at federal level, at state level, and other types of suits, go out and do it.
Well, hold up. How? Why can't somebody do it on your behalf using your information.
Again, I'd have to shut up. So somebody could do it on their behalf. And, you know, one of the things I have done, and I say this on my broadcast, I've also, one major area that is really outrageous is that governments, many governments around the world, to get on the right side of the Clintons and maybe the Obamas and the Bushes, have sent more than $1 billion to this set of frauds. Not just once, many, many times. So what I've done in the 4 years is I have friends around the world in some of these countries, and I've made these governments, through my friends have made these governments aware that there's an opportunity to get all this money back.
Right.
For the people of Norway, the people of France. You know, the largest donor, the country that may have given the largest amount of money to the Clinton Foundation is, of all places, France.
What? Why?
Yeah, and indeed, there's an entity called Unitaid, UNITAID, based in Geneva, which was set up on September 19, 2006, after the Global Fund had been created, after the U.S. had created PEPFAR and sent lots of money to fight AIDS. The French got together with a few other nations and the Gates Foundation and said, why don't we do the same sort of thing? And between 2007 and the present, the largest donor to the Clinton Foundation, with, in theory, the goal of fighting HIV/AIDS, something the Clinton Foundation has never been authorized to do, has sent the Clinton $650 million. $650 million. With a majority of that coming from, around a majority of that coming from the people of France and other travelers who went through France. Unitaid, the French government collects, bits and bobs of travel tickets, a tax on this if you're a coach, higher tax if you're first class, a tax on the train, and they put all that money into a pot and send it to Unitaid. And Unitaid, in theory, was supposed to send money only to help the poorest people in the world. Instead of doing that, they sent this money, it seems they sent this money to an organization that didn't exist legally in Massachusetts.
What was the name of the organization that didn't exist?
The Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS Initiative, Inc. was formed on March 24, 2004, the same way the main foundation was, but it didn't have bylaws signed. As far as I can tell, it never got federal tax exemption. It immediately started taking money and claiming all sorts of activities all over the world, in league with Epstein, actually. Epstein provided his plane to fly around so the Clintons and others in the orbit could pretend that they were fighting HIV and AIDS. And then I don't believe they ever got federal tax exemptions because they created the thing incorrectly. And to cover that up, they just announced a fictional merger. They said, what we're going to do is just simply merge this entity into the parent. I used to run a merchant department a long time ago, and I've done deals all over the world. And I can tell you, there was no legal merger yet. Can't take one charity that has no authority to fight HIV/AIDS, that being the library, and merge it with another one that was improperly formed and call it lawful. That's illegal. But, they were too far down the road saying they were going to do this. They hadn't yet secured Unitaid money. Remember, that didn't get formed until September 19th, 2016. And then they're off to the races. And why do they need money in 2006. Why do they need money in 2006? Somebody we know is running for re-election as the senator. And somebody we know then on January 20th, 2007, announces she wants to be president of the United States. Those campaigns cost money.
Yep.
And between 2007, 8, 9, I have documented on my show and in slides the fact that about $300 million went from Unitaid towards this entity that didn't exist lawfully, and about at least $100 million of that has disappeared.
Would you care to speculate? You should see us, Charles. Our jaws are dropped, literally. Our eyes are widened over here.
Jesus.
This just gets worse and worse. AIDS is something I know way too much about. I've often wondered, I've looked at the corruption of the science primarily. But let's just boil this down. France giving that colossal amount of money to the non-existent Clinton HIV/AIDS, whatever it's called, charity. Why might they have done that, what are they after? What is France after, do you think? Is it resources? Do you care to speculate?
Yeah, I would do care to speculate. What I think this is all about, this is about presidents and prime ministers behaving badly. This is about Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton growing up basically poor, coming to Washington, D.C. eventually, having spent time in Little Rock, living off the taxpayer in mansions. You start flying around on Air Force One and saying presidential suites and meeting all these billionaires and the investment fund people, and you start saying to yourself, you know what, I deserve to live like this. But I got no savings, and I got $14 million in debt, which was their situation in 1999-2000. So you create a modus operandi for people like the Clintons to live large. You create a club of former presidents. And there are charities. There's one called the Club de Madrid. There's another thing called the Elders. There are groupings of these former presidents who position themselves, oh, we're fantastic, we do great stuff. And people who want, and the former presidents can open doors at multinational lateral organizations that will lend you money. And so it's, you know, there's an economic reason to contribute $1 million or even $10 million or $25 million.
I still don't get it though, for France, the government of France? Yeah.
So, you know, there are political campaigns in France. People need money to finance those campaigns. And so Sarkozy, was, by 2007, he won a race for president, or whatever it is, prime minister, whatever the title is in France. Those campaigns, by law, in France, the ability to finance those campaigns is constrained. And it's tough to raise money in France because the tax rates are very high. People are not inclined to spend that kind of money. What better thing to have around than a leaky pot of money in Switzerland, where money can disappear and help Sarkozy win his election and maybe help somebody in the UK.
Oh, so it's how they exchanged enormous sums of money with a pretext.
This is very interesting what you're saying. First of all, the whole disaster relief scam, you know, these political elites and stuff making money through disaster relief scams. Actually, the first time I'd ever heard of it was from an Al Jazeera correspondent who was talking to me about who was making the money off of Hurricane Sandy. And yeah. No, off of Louisiana.
Katrina.
And but, you know, like in Europe, there was an organization called the Atlantic Bridge Organization. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It was that was started, you know, it was founded with Margaret Thatcher as its president. And it had, you know, the former Secretary of State for Defense on there, cabinet ministers and all that. You know, and allegedly it was called the Atlantic Bridge Research and Education. And it was supposed to be an educational charity foundation that was supposed to promote cooperation between the U.K. and the United States regarding political, economic, and defense issues. And finally, and I'm getting to something here with the Clinton Foundation, and finally it was dissolved. It was forced to dissolve in September 2011 because the Charity Commission in the U.K., the U.K.'s Charity Commission looked into it and said it was, you know, it was a political organization. Now, I say this because the Clinton Foundation has an office in London, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's another story. So what the Clintons did, you know, they the way this kind of stuff works, and, you know, I should preface this by saying the area of giving money away lawfully is an area that is, you know, it is apolitical, and the overwhelming majority of charities around the world are well-run. The problem is I would regard it almost as a disease of the mind, which is this belief in unregulated globalism, that makes sense. And then the proliferation and power of the Internet have made it possible to get these gigantic sums of money directed towards projects that sound great, but no one ever really looks to see what actually happened. One example would be the Global Fund. Now, the Global Fund is based in Geneva, like UNITAID. It's part of the World Health Organization, another entity that needs to be wholesale eviscerated and restructured.
Oh, yeah.
So the Global Fund has collected over $60 billion. Okay, its chairman for a period of time was none other than Rajat Gupta, the convicted felon, the former chairman, managing partner of McKinsey. An insider believes that about 75% of the money that went through Geneva to the Global Fund has been stolen. 75%.
Oh, my God. By whom?
By the various and sundry people, the governments, the officials. See, the trick is, and this is, in college, actually, one of the things I did study was international economics and politics in developing countries. And I traveled around to many countries. And so in the last year or so, I've been going back and looking at data. And all this money, hundreds of billions, maybe even trillions of dollars, it's been sent to these places in sub-Saharan Africa and Asia, whatever. You go and you ask yourself, all right, how many miles or kilometers of road are there in a place like the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which is a gigantic place? The answer is not many. You know, where are the people? In Western Europe, they're concentrated in cities. 80% or pretty much of the population are in cities. Same here in the U.S. In places like the Democratic Republic of the Congo, it might be 20% are in cities or 30%. And there are no roads. There's no electricity. There are no doctors. There are no hospitals. There's no clean water. You know, and this is after 40 years. I mean, I first went to Africa in 1976, 43 years ago. You know, what has happened to all this money? The answer, you know, do-gooders, you know, get involved with this stuff. They don't want to understand that their corruption is endemic now in the U.S., in Europe, in Africa. You talk about a project. George W. said, you know, he was praised for sending $15 billion in the first round of PEPFAR for HIV/AIDS. There was no way that the afflicted countries could absorb that amount of money. There was no infrastructure.
Right.
And so that money disappears.
Yeah, I've crossed Africa. I can concur. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, the corruption is. Now, Christina came upon something just before we began the broadcast to do with Mr. Jeffrey Epstein. Do you want to share that?
Sure.
Yeah, it was Alan Dershowitz and Gerald Lefcourt who were representing Epstein, you know, when he was being tried for using underage girls in his sex ring, right? And they wrote a 23-page letter, you know, trying to get the court to exonerate him, of course. And one of the things they wrote in the letter was that Mr. Epstein was part of the original group that conceived the Clinton Global Initiative, described as a project bringing together a community of global leaders to devise and implement innovative solutions to some of the world's most pressing challenges, which is interesting because, as you remarked earlier, wasn't the Clinton Foundation, I mean, this global initiative was spun off of that, but did they have a legal mandate to do this thing that they said they were going to do, bringing together a community of global leaders, blah, blah, blah? I mean.
Yeah, that's an outrageous letter. That's not dated July 7, 2007, is it?
I can look and see when it was dated. I did not note the date. It was July 2007 to the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of Florida.
Right. So we talked about that letter on my show two shows ago and broadcast links to it and everything. That letter is, I won't break any laws here by using the word that I might want to use, but it is a crock of something that smells.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, in the first instance, you know, by July of 2007, we know from other reporting that a team of people had, by July 2007, the Clinton Foundation was in desperate shape. I mean, its financials were completely out of kilter. The HIV/AIDS people had stolen $23 million and had notified the people in the management of the Clinton Foundation that $23 million was gone. And instead of admitting that, we have later reporting which says that they decided to take $23 million from a quasi-endowment. There is no such real thing that the Clinton Foundation should have had, and inject that in to cover off the loss. The Clinton Global Initiative, you know, another thing that the great Ira Magaziner, who's so sloppy in his work, but was at one point the Internet czar, likes to forget, is the Internet, nothing disappears on the Internet.
Right.
And so the Clinton Global Initiative was formed online. on November 15th, 2004, 3 days before the Clinton Foundation library thing opened in Little Rock. That's on, you get that on icons through the Who Is Lookup function.
Yeah.
And I've done shows about that. So that thing was conceived by then. Band, Duck Band, and Clinton and others have reminisced about the fact that they all got on, probably Epstein's jet, went to the World Economic Forum, which is that thing held out there in Switzerland.
Yep.
And it costs a lot of money to go to it, and you hobnob. And I would guess they looked at each other and said, you know, we can do this. We don't need to spend this money to go to Switzerland. We'll just do something like this. And that's a business development thing. Early on, I checked. The Clintons were making a lot of noise when they were in government about the Renaissance Weekend.
Yeah.
Which is something that people go to down, I think, in South Carolina around Christmas time. And so I called them. I contacted those people. I said, are you a charity? Said, absolutely not. We're not a charity. So they thought they could masquerade, you know, having a closed session where they decide who gets to go to these Clinton Global Initiative meetings. And they wall it off from prying eyes. And then they go to these investment firms and law firms and accounting firms and others, and they say, listen, we're going to have all these world leaders, powerful people in a room together. Would you like to pay up and come to our meeting? We're only going to let your law firm in. We won't let other law firms in. Or maybe we'll just let two law firms in instead of the hundreds that might want to hobnob and get involved with all these deals. And they started doing that, of course. I mean, if you're a crook and you don't care about the laws, you know, it was a brilliant maneuver. They held the first one around the time of the annual general, you know, the UN general meeting, General Assembly here in New York, where there are all these,
yep,
frankly, crooked leaders who come here.
Right.
And they got them together in a room, and they immediately announced these absurd amounts of money. They said, they're all, the press releases are in the public domain. They're marketing puff pieces, bragging about this money raised for that purpose. By 2006, they actually had this young guy get up there, this, you know, Bill brings this young Italian guy up on stage and says, isn't this guy fantastic? He's going to give money. Next, a couple days later, the guy's in Rikers Island. Made the whole story up. This guy, Foliari, you know, the guy who supposedly was going to, is connected to the Catholic Church and Manhattan. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you go back through these. And unfortunately for the Clintons, you know, I've been doing this. I've been encouraging on my show. Again, I'll do my 170th show on this Sunday. All this stuff is in the public domain. There's 3,000 projects described in the Clinton Global Initiative. Every single one of them is fraudulent.
Can you talk about the pay to play while she was in the State Department, while Hillary Clinton was in the State Department?
Yeah. So I've never been involved in. I don't believe I've ever really been involved in any projects involving, you know, getting a government to do this or to do that. But what you see in this thing, first of all, Bill and Hillary had been in the White House for 8 years. So they got a chance to see, you know, just how much of an edge a president of the United States and the Secretary of State can either give to a friend or how much problem they can give to an enemy.
Right.
They knew this well before Hillary started getting positioned to be Secretary of State. And when we look at the reporting and the actual documents coming out on this email thing. There's an excellent resource. It's called the FBI Vault, and it's online.
Yep.
There is a 34-part dump. The actual pages you can see is in the thousands of pages. It's all in about 13,000 pages. And it explains that an investigation was mounted by the FBI, in theory, quotes, starting on July 10th, 2015, of Hillary Clinton for public corruption and mishandling of classified information. And the basic way, what was really going on here, and the big question that should be asked is, who allowed Hillary Clinton to conduct all of her business on unsecure servers and unsecure electronic devices by January 21st, 2009, when she became Secretary of State? Who made that decision? Who was involved in making that decision? Because, you know, I've got to believe, I mean, I have a hope for all the money we spend in federal government that there are people who would say, no, wait a minute, you can't do that. And then who allowed her to continue doing this all the way through February 1st, 2013, and then retain prop custody of all those records? who allowed that? You know, because there have to be a lot of people who allowed that. And then we take the question of these emails. You know, the emails that are missing are not just those for that period, but what about the period, say, around, I don't know, let's call it April 2015 when she announced. January 20th, 2007, when she announced her president. Let's see those emails all the way back to then. And let's see all the emails involving the Clinton Foundation. And bear in mind that with the Clinton Foundation, when governments have made money contributions to the Clinton Foundation, they retain their side of the email exchanges. And I have some of those from some of the governments.
Oh, wow.
So the thing that the way this works is, I think, if a government wants to get on the right side of a foreign government, on the right side of the Obama administration, they arrange to write a check to the Clinton Foundation, or to say they're going to write a check to the Clinton Foundation. And if they're really crooked, you know, what they do is they say, we'll get, you know, the Treasury of, let's say, Australia, when Downer was Foreign Secretary, to give us $100 million. And we'll get Downer to say that he actually spent $100 million, when in fact what he did is he spent $40 million and kept $60 million. I'm making those numbers up.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's one step, you know, the donor crookedness is one step, and the recipient crookedness is in the public domain in certain cases. If you Google Mozambique, Tanzania, you'll find that in just those two countries' cases, and there are other cases, the central banks of these countries are crooked. The finance ministries, the leaders of the countries are crooked. So they go, they put their hands up and you say, you know what, I understand, Celia, that you're concerned about AIDS, and we've got a serious problem here in this country of AIDS. Well, how serious is the problem, you ask? And the president says, well, you know, I see over here this country got $100 million. We want $400 million. And you say, okay, I happen to have $400 million. It's not my money. I'll give you $400 million. And nobody's actually checking, you know, why is it that these reported rates of incidence of AIDS are so high in one country and the neighboring country is not as high?
Well,
what's going on here?
Precisely.
And so many years later...
Wait, hold up, though. So in the pay-to-play, the Hillary pay-to-play, what are some of the actual examples of that happening?
I'll give you an easy one. A lot of hay has been made about Trump University. There's an entity called Laureate Education, Inc. It's a publicly traded, for-profit set of universities. Now, just take a step back here and ask yourself, why do we need for-profit universities around the world? That doesn't make sense. In many countries, it's illegal. Between May of 2010 and April of 2015, Bill Clinton and Hillary, she was married to him, collected $17.6 million in funds for Bill's service as chancellor of the Laureate Education School System. Okay, Laureate entered into a joint venture with the Clinton Global Initiative, something that doesn't exist, and they operated something called Clinton Global Initiative University. The founder, the founders of Laureate had a keen interest in making sure that U.S. might was used to stop governments around the world where it's illegal to have these for-profit entities disciplining Laureate around the world. And one of the founders was active with a charity that ultimately the taxpayers, helps support. It's called the International Youth Foundation or something like that. So it's a convoluted mess, but the headline is, you know, people with implausible stories, the founders of Laureate Education claim that they went to private schools, got into places like Harvard and Penn back in the 80s, and said, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to go to those schools. And then somehow made money different ways and somehow cobbled together this Laureate Education in a complex leverage plan that came together and closed in August 2007. So this is all very interesting because the professional firms that are involved with the Clinton Foundation defending it and with Laureate are one and the same. DLA Piper, which was called in 2015 to assist in studying the Clinton Foundation when there were all these controversies swirling, some of which I brought to light, they represented the Clinton Foundation. They also represented Laureate Education. Price Waterhouse, which did an audit, which is, I think, grossly in error. Several audits. They audited Laureate and they audited the Clinton Foundation. None of these links, which all of them should be disclosed in the Clinton Foundation filings, all the Clinton Foundation filings in this period from 2010 to 2015, none of these links have yet been explained. All of them are material. All of them should be disclosed. And to this date, they still aren't. And you know, Laureate was, to take it even further, Laureate was one of the most unlucky leveraged buyouts ever. It closed right as the first, the most recent credit crash happened, began to accelerate in 2007, August. It was very complicated. They borrowed a lot of money and too much debt, and they needed equity. So on our way out the door, or as Hillary was leaving, the International Finance Corporation, part of the World Bank, made the largest single investment ever in a company, Laureate Education, $150 million investment in a highly troubled company that couldn't go. They tried to go public.
So
they couldn't.
Why did Clinton get $17 million? For what?
For putting his name on the door, flying around the world, saying, I'm the chancellor of Laureate Education. It's an absurd. It was a part-time job. He was making over $3 million a year for a part-time job. And this is an area, you know, Elizabeth Warren and everybody wants to regulate the private sector. This is an area where, you know, we need to have a serious discussion about, and I think at least one of your authors, maybe both of your published authors, you know, how many authors do you know who get $10 million advances for their first book?
But weren't there also contributions to the Clinton Foundation when Hillary was involved in deals with, I think it was the Saudis? And I mean, doesn't the Clinton Foundation get a lot of money from the Middle East?
It does, indeed. It's from all over the place. And again, under New York law and California law, which are tougher laws, and they do have to report both those states, you'll have to disclose in specific detail all your grants from any government. And you can't just say Saudi Arabia, $10 million. You've got to say which part of Saudi Arabia, what was the grant for, when was it given, you know, the amount, et cetera. The Clintons have never filled those forms. Clinton Foundation has never filled those forms out properly for the period 1997 to 2007.
But isn't there a connection between some of these contributions that were made and the State Department making decisions or allowing okaying deals and things? I mean, I'm trying to remember.
Right. Right, absolutely. So there's Uranium One. There was a project that people came up with in Russia called Smolkovo, which is an attempt in 2010, 11, 12 timeframe to create a Silicon Valley equivalent in Russia. There were concerns in the FBI about whether American companies, high tech companies, should participate in these deals. They did. Hillary and others traveled over to Russia to meet on this. There was a concern that people would make contributions to the Clinton Foundation to allow technology to be transferred to Russia and to others that shouldn't have been transferred.
Were contributions
to Russia and to others.
Were contributions made
to the Clinton Foundation?
What was? How much was made?
Well, Russia donated, I've seen on the internet, $145 million to the Clinton Foundation. Does that sound right?
Well, yeah, that's the Uranium One transaction. So there the idea was they created a joint venture up in Canada to operate in Canada called the Clinton JUSTRA, G-I-U-S-T-R-A, Sustainable Growth Initiative, is what it's called now. None of those papers were done properly. None of those reports are proper. And they have attempted today to disguise the identities of the real donors, the real people who gave the $145 million. We on the outside don't know that, but you know, you look at the way stormtrooper FBI people came into Roger Stone's house or to Manafort's place,
right?
Michael Cohen. You know, there's no excuse for at this stage not knowing how much money the Clinton Foundation has declared that it received through these various places.
Has any hammer come down on this god awful Clinton Foundation, or is it coming? Before we close out the show, is there any hope, Charles?
Yeah, so the way our system works is you're innocent until proven guilty, and for that reason, you know, people who are not a party to a criminal proceeding shouldn't know anything about it. So I don't know anything about criminal proceedings that may be in progress. But I can tell you that there are I believe there are quite a few foreign governments who are watching this very closely. There's public reporting. The Horowitz report suggests that an FBI investigation was opened on in January 2016. There's John Solomon reporting that it was reopened in January of 2018. There's a press release saying the IRS opened an investigation in July of 2016. And there are now reports there's a great woman named Conchita Sarnoff who has a book out on Epstein called Trafficking, which I just was able to buy. And it provides very tantalizing details about other investigations that are in progress. So the real issue here is not to investigate the substance, but to figure out why this has not come together faster. People are impeding this investigation. Who are these people and why?
Now, there was news broke, Charles, very dark, frightening, on around July 24th, that a top FBI agent named Cincinnati was investigating the finances of the Clinton Foundation and supposedly committed suicide on a nightclub dance floor. I'm not asking you to speculate about that, but the Austin police were instructed, as we know, by the FBI not to release any details of this death to the media.
You know, something else, too, by the way, is that news that has just come out is that Epstein was an FBI informant, which means, you know, the FBI, I don't know, it feels like Whitey Bulger, it feels like these other cases where the FBI allows all this criminal activity to go on as it's trying to go after other people or other information. And I wonder if this whole Clinton Foundation thing is tied up in some similar thing, you know?
Let me just let everybody know we have 2 minutes to go. Charles, can we have your Twitter handle and your website address?
In both cases, it's my name, at Charles Ortel, O-R-T-E-L, and the other one's www.charlesortel.com. And then Jason Goodman has something called crowdsourcedthetruth.org and .com that have not only, you know, the show I do with him, Sunday with Charles at 3 p.m., but many, many videos up there, and I've done a lot of interviews all over the place, and I've made this my life's work.
You are indefatigable, we all owe you such
Bravo.
A debt. Yeah, one day, Charles, it's all gonna come to light, and you're without you, I don't know if we would know any of this. So.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean,
Charles, thank you for joining us. It's been such an honor and a pleasure. And keep doing what you're doing, and we will keep watching and learning and listening. It'll take us a long time to catch up to you.
Yeah, this isn't the last time you're going to be on this show, that's for sure.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you, Charles.